We have set a law, we recognize the international law and critical race theory. But nonetheless, there's this political uproar, which we know has started in upstate New York around Hamilton College, because there's a big right-wing political campaign that forced Hamilton College to get, make sure students of both are getting a lot of the people. And this is sort of a spillover from that particular effort, which was successful. And I guess, you know, they smelled blood, so then they said, oh, we're supposed to be on the panel to do this, so let's go after war. So this makes big publicity. It's the Denver News right after in Denver. They have just won appeal on Columbus Day protest, and the Denver media is all hyped up for, you know, let's go, you know, attack those Indians. They, you know, they just convinced the jury, and that jury was really stupid. And so it takes a big splash. And then we have this big political, you know, the only thing dropped out of the sky. Bill Owens, the governor, complained that firemen, right? He said, excuse me, that would be illegal, and I don't care, right? We'll go to court, you're going to be violated. Just firemen first. And this is the governor, right? Saying this is illegal, sir. Not all the reasons, but several of the reasons he's saying the same thing. And then they say, and then they apologize. The Houston Free Speech term, your academic freedom term, where did this come from? Any of us who work for a university system make state political statements, scholarly statements, academic statements? What are we speaking on behalf of the state of Colorado? Where do they come up, you know, making a decision about how they feel about this particular set of statements and then apologizing to the nation? That has really serious implications, I think, for any of us writer or say as academics. And then they attack this process completely arbitrary. They just made it up. The process didn't exist before. They just made up this process. I think the reason is because they knew it would be illegal to find them, but they were under all this political pressure. So they just made up a process out of the hat, never informed more about it, never consulted any more with it. They just, you know, essentially bought themselves what amounted to 2 months of time. And in the course of buying themselves 2 months of time, because they were scared to make a politically unpopular legal decision, they made an open season for the media. And of course, we know that there are large-scale, well-organized attempts to purge academia of all sorts of people, and word is fairly high on that purge list. And so this was a great opportunity. 2 months' worth of time in which the media could go around and dig up every possible, you know, person who has ever hated war. Let's go talk to his ex-wife from 20 years ago. Let's go talk to, you know, see if we can't find this. Let's borrow the footnotes. And I don't know about you all, but, you know, I've written not nearly as much as war. I'm sure I've written a whole lot of footnotes, and I'm sure that there's stuff in those footnotes that, you know, probably I took, you know, the description of the case, you know, have exactly the same wording as somebody else's description of the case or something in there. And I'm sure somebody looked, they could find, you know, there was some month back in 1989 when I forgot to pay my personal phone calls back in the office or something, right? And for people like Lloyd, who's been not only very outspoken, consistent critics of the U.S. government's foreign policy and U.S. government's domestic policy, and understanding better in terms of, the failure of the government to comply with law, but nonetheless, he's been a critic and he's also been politically active with very highly. You do that, there are people out there who are happy to criticize you, especially when it's open season and maybe there are no consequences for anything they want to say. So what we've seen is this whole range of allegations. The sources of these allegations are never checked. If they were checked, they'd see that most of them, a huge proportion of them, all tie back to a very small handful of people who've been saying this stuff for 15 or 20 years, and have generally been displayed. But now it's under threat. The media is not examining the sources. They're not looking at it critically. They're not looking at the battery of well-respected eminent scholars who actually know something about these fields, who have consistently and continue to praise the word scholarship for them. But that doesn't matter. It's a media game. And so, by opening this investigation period up to completely unrestricted and disreputable media practices, they can actually come up. I think it's sort of interesting that these were the only things they managed to come up with. They were scraping real hard. But this is what they managed to come up with. And now, somehow, this is a legitimate subject of academic review. Right? We turn it over to this committee. This is somehow a legitimate process. And I think it's really, really important to keep in mind the fact that this started from a disagreement or a dislike or a desire to quash a voice with this grainy significant issues of political dissent. And now it has suddenly been changed into, of course you can say whatever you want. But what's the message that's really going out there to all the rest of us who say things that are critical of government policy or otherwise, perhaps, at least in mainstream media, unpopular views? The message is, of course you're free to say, but your personal life can be put under a microscope and it can be shredded. And you can be attacked on all manner of bases, and there doesn't have to be any support for or backup for those allegations. We can just go after you, and then we won't fire you because of what you said. We just get to go around and figure out any old thing that we want to go and attack you for and fire you for. I don't find that like a particularly comforting position to be taken, and I think it's a really dangerous one that we may be letting slide. I think that as Lloyd said, there's been tremendous support from academic communities around the country and others as well up until this point. And I think this is a role that was moved by the university to try to cut that off, to give people sort of a free pass. Academic freedom is fine. It's fine to go after people and anything else you can back up, but you don't have to be responsible then because we've stood up for academic freedom. And I just want to say a couple of things. One is that I think if you look at the pattern of the attacks that have progressed over the last 2 years, it is a classic disinformation campaign. And we don't have time to go through the details of that, but if you just look at what was said about that 9/11 piece, first of all, what were actually said in that 9/11 piece was turned upside down. Like, he was saying he was not advocating defending the attacks. He said, if U.S. policy, has these kinds of results, resulting in the death and devastation of people, their children, their communities around the world, this is going to be the result. And if we don't want these kinds of attacks, maybe we should look at the cause. And that's, first of all, he's got to turn that around and say, he's advocating that, urging people to engage in those kinds of attacks, whatever. That kind of stumbled, right, when people started actually reading the report. So then they come to, he incites other people to violence. He incites the students to violence, and they take these little clips that were taken from a surreptitiously taped meeting. They take them completely out of context, and again, they usually say the opposite of what he was saying, which was he was not, telling young people to go out and blow up buildings or whatever. He was saying, essentially, go work within the institution, work within the system. That's where you have the skills and talents to go make change. So they tried that, right? They're not going to really fly, when the whole context came out. And so then they tried to do validation of, maybe you didn't really fail that, but see the person will not come back. Right? You see this, you know, attempt, 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 and all those accusations are, you know, unsubstantiated, previously unreported for the most part. I mean, it's this clear line of if one version of this story doesn't work, then we just move to the next one. We get increasingly personal and, you know, throwing up stuff and maybe something will stick. And that's also pretty much what's happened along the actual academic line. Right? When it started coming out, they've written, you know, 20-some books and more than 100 articles and however many dozens of book chapters, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, we want to take on that whole body of scholarship. So let's see if we can't get up a few people who have other interpretations of particular historical facts or disagreements over certain books. These are things that happen, you know, all the time in academia. You know, they're not usually made the basis for, you know, 2 months worth of real life. And so we see, as I said, if you start putting these pieces together, it's a very classic pattern of trying to discredit somebody, trying to neutralize them, by destroying their reputation, their credibility, at the same time they're doing this tap dancing on the academic freedom thing. And finally, the last point I just wanted to make is, in this process, one of the reasons it has worked as well as it has, I think one of the reasons that as many people are going along with this, sort of sitting back and watching, is because of this allegation of identity. And more broadly, I think it's because there's been this incredible tapping into a kind of racism that we don't really talk about, we don't acknowledge, but that facilitates this process of movement from actual substantive critique into nasty personal attacks. I think that the racism involved here is really facilitating that, and I think that we really need to take that seriously. On the one hand, what we have seen are incredible barrages of the most virulent anti-Indian racism you can imagine. You know, of course, one of the ethnic studies department is also under attack. And one of my little pet projects when I go back is to put out a little brochure that says, why we need ethnic studies, and just publish, you know, a small fraction of these emails. Because they're unbelievable. They also center around the theme of, we should have killed you all. Trivington should have finished the job. But, you know, with lots of real, ugly, unrepeatable adjectives thrown in. There's that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, there's like, he's not really an Indian. And all of these allegations stem from, again, a small handful of people who have been saying that this has been discredited for years. But now all of a sudden, they are given credibility in the national media and in by the university itself, apparently, even though the university has, you know, worked at it, and looking at it since 1978. All of a sudden, it becomes credible, right? For a community of presumably white folks, and most of the people who have been raising this criticism, that the white folks who know nothing about war, who know nothing about the history of American Indian identity, who know nothing about the federal laws that deal with discrimination of identity. And there's an attempt to literally strip him of his identity. If you know anything about the history of race and racial classifications in this country and the determination of Indian identity, that has been one of the primary purposes of federal law, to see the Indian soul of race. You know, let's, as the boarding school philosophy was, kill the Indian, save the man. You know, get rid of the Indian. He wore Churchill, and he won't be wore Churchill anymore, and then nobody will listen to him. And that, you know, perfectly consistent with the history of the imposition of identity of American Indian people. But somehow that seems like that's okay. And I keep saying that in an academic environment, we should be particularly concerned about that, because allowing the level of racism that's been involved in this process to go forward uncalled out, you know, without calling out, without checking it, I think this gives a whole nice tool to this general attempt at curing academia that masks the real content issues and substance issues and allows a certain kind of completely open process to slide by with the thought that, you know, well, I don't have an interview issue. The truth is, they're going to really investigate war's identity in the way they claim the research misconduct committee is going to do it, you know, this is going to be real interesting. You know, I mean, I checked the Asian American box for
what it was.
I don't even want to make an American. I don't even want to say that because a lot of people are going to be writing on the Japanese American internment. It sounds a lot better than being Japanese American. Not there in Lob Land, the word is that word's not an Indian, but his race definitely is. People just randomly get to decide. They can look at your book and what they think your identity is. But if the institution is going to officially take this on as a cast, it's going to be really interesting. Anyway, we'll just have to see how that goes. But I think it's really important for us to see the patterns and not to fall for the classic kind of basic which tactics that are being used here. Thank you.
It's going to answer how important work money is when we need to know. But we know every industrial complex has a lot to do with our so-called everyday life in the country. And the kind of hard forces that we must fight against. This is what I'm going to do. Okay. It's important to understand also that without going in this country, if not only so well organized, but even more importantly, so well funded, it has been very, very effective in identifying those of us who speak to the power. If more Churchill than that was not doing that, he would not be in the position he is in now. I am a victim of the FBI counterintelligence program. I was sentenced to 66 years in prison in 1968 for a crime, in quote, of organizing non-violent protests against racism in the popular schools of East Los Angeles. I was only a young scholar, and I was not yet, quote, a notorious professor emeritus at Berkeley. Now, those of you who have more white hair than I do in the audience, remember, McCarthyism, right? You're happy with it. You have to attack them, you got against the government, you are ipso facto a communist. Whether you are part of the individual or not, of the communist party. Now, the pity of that, you know, is calling those of us, or that's people calling those of us, who continue to speak for the power, either terrorist or terrorist sympathizers in turn. Now, the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, whom the governor of Colorado, I think, is in memory of standing, okay, is a, as Mark has mentioned, part of the Cheney Foundation process. There's another organization of whom we have well-represented individuals here called the National Association of Scholars. The same people on our faculty here who have been attacking those of us in ethnic studies since the time we emerged on this university campus back in 1969. They're also responsible for the attack on the world churches. And there is the Students for Academic Freedom, talking about misnomers, or oxymorons, I don't know, whatever they put it. They're very well organized, here and everywhere else. So this attack on Lord Churchill represents an attack on ethnic studies, and the heart, women's studies now, and probably black studies soon, Asian American studies soon. But it's also an attack on the academy as a whole. Because we're part of this academy, whether some people out there not resist it. And whether some people out there not, our scholarship collectively has contributed to making the academy a much more meaningful enterprise in this nation as well.
That's
right. Okay? People like Lord Churchill, Lin Ki Wong, Ron Kataki, Michael Barrera, they're the money too. Okay? Roman Alcorn, Laura Pence, Barbara Simpson, Jim Jordan, and the rest of the team, and I know they're here with me today, very angry, haven't they? They're here in spirit. You can always join us for all the times that we're going to have people like this, you know, too. Building for our collective scholarship, you all absolutely do all this. What do you want to know anything about sexuality? What do you want about gender, patriarchy? You know, it was those of us in the ethnic studies who were the first ones to begin to, you know, speak to the power in the scholarship. Now, what's going on in Georgia, as an example, the fourth one, and you know about this one, the state legislature there has passed, right, the legislation, designed to waste the university curriculum and adopt it to professors teaching research in public activity. International well-known scholar the name of Tariq Ramadan at Notre Dame University was denied an appointment at the University by the Immigration and Immigration Service. There is right now a bill before the House of Representatives, number 6307. That if passed, would create an international advisory board that, according to the memorandum of the Coalition of International Education, allows for, quote, general intervention in the conduct and content of international studies programs. Okay? That's going on right now. So I think it is very important to place what's going on in Colorado and what's going on with Professor Ward Churchill in the context of a speaker. It's not just an isolated issue or case. It's very, very serious implications and ramifications to the very future of our nation as a
before I go to the floor,
I would like to receive any talent or comment from me, any additional comment or question. And please identify yourself first, and then try to limit your comments to as brief as possible.